that automatically set up our conversations to be polarized, or automatically set up our conversations to be on edge. I think there's a better way to come back to normalcy and to connection.
What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. When the pandemic swept the globe, Americans appeared to drop the polarizing divisions that had driven us apart and rally together to face a challenge our generation had never seen. We could feel more than ever just how precious life is and how much we need each other. But then something happened. The polarization that characterized our culture returned as we witnessed racial violence and questionable leadership while navigating conversations and mandates around masks and vaccinations. Yet this time around, we were facing off with friends and loved ones, not having yet recovered from the collective trauma we had all experienced. And this broke the heart of relationship coach Dawn Bennett, who decided to do something about it. Tune in to hear Dawn share the subtle ways that language has impacted our sense of safety. You'll find out the biological reasons why we are all struggling in our friendships as we move forward in this quote-unquote new normal. And you'll also discover the ways in which we can begin to stop the polarization and increase the connection. It's time. Get a cup of something yummy and enjoy these sips of story and sanity with us. Welcome to Sips of Story and Sanity, where we talk about the stories behind the good stories with authors, speakers, and thought leaders. My partners here at Saved by Story, my son, Aaron.
Hello.
Sister, Alyssa.
Hi.
And clients turn friends turn partners. We have Teddy.
Hi, y'all.
And Lori.
Hey, everyone.
And Carlin.
Hello.
Who are all here to help me make sure that we get the most amazing sips of story and sanity out of this experience. Because today we have a special guest. Dawn Bennett is the number one bestselling author of The Touch Crisis, Navigating the Tricky Terrain of Bringing Healthy Touch Back to Our Culture, and is preparing to release her second book, What Happened to My Friendships? Five Steps to Navigate the Social Distancing Crisis. She works to help people heal relationships on all levels, including relationship with self. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's good to be back. I'm talking with you about book number two. I know you have so many of them inside of you, so we'll be doing this.
Half books everywhere.
You just get done with one and another one comes through.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think it was right after you launched Touch Crisis that the idea for this one started to percolate. Take us back there and tell us, you know, what got this journey started for you?
Yeah. So what I was noticing, of course, because we were in the middle of pandemic, and as my, you know, I do work with relationships and emotional healing and connection. And like my passion is to like get people to love themselves and love others, right? And how do we come with clarity and communication and consent and all of those things and really see each other for who they are and accept each other for who they are, right? Like this is like my life passion and my life goal. And so what I was seeing a lot during COVID, right? Of course, we all had to go through the masks and the not touching and the social distancing and the fear. And then the polarity that had already started that I really had noticed even when I came back from Europe, but the polarity between people's opinions and how they held themselves in their opinions really seemed to shift. And I really felt drawn to write something that helped remind people that we can love somebody or like somebody or tolerate somebody or accept somebody, not scream at them, right? Just because they have a different opinion, right? We can say like, oh, your opinion's not for me. And now I get to choose what to do with that. But that doesn't mean that other person is bad or wrong or evil or anything. So that's really what inspired this book, especially when I was watching people's friendships break up out of a difference of opinion. You know, it's like, wow, you've known her for 20 years and you're just gonna, oh, you think something different than me and I'm throwing you out the door. And to me, I was like, how could you do that to someone you love? And that's really where this book started.
So did you have your own like situations that were happening during this time with all of these big conversations that were happening? You know, I mean, this is one of those topics that is a little bit spicy to talk about publicly, right? Because a lot of people tend to keep their thoughts to themselves. We're going around, we're looking at like the regulations here and the regulations there. And it's been this huge conversation between us while we've been looking at this book. But for you, like, what were some of those moments that you, I mean, you tell a few wonderful stories in the book about like these moments where the rubber hit the road for you. You just written this project of, you know, this launched this book about basically relationships and this whole process. And then, man, were you ever in the fire testing this one out?
Right. Well, and I think even the most recent example was this Labor Day weekend, which was just last weekend. So like in my mind and a lot of people's mind, kind of the big part of COVID is over, right? Most things have opened up. Most things are, you know, not requiring vax cards, not requiring certain regulations or restrictions anymore. And I was supposed to go to this event that I've been going to for 10 years. And it's a small event. It's about 100 people. It's the similar people every year. And private party camping, outdoors, like super just lovely, fun people dancing, all of that kind of stuff, like a mini festival. And they decided to require vax cards this year. And I've chosen to not be vaccinated for a variety of reasons. And so for me, it was that like feeling like I was ousted from the community. And it was really hard because of course I wanted to be like, well, why would they do that? Like, even though I understood like a lot of the population at that party is elderly, right? Like they're above 60, some quite a few are above 70, even though they tend to be in good health. It was still really challenging for me to not take that personally because what my brain wanted to do is be like those people who believe XYZ and don't see that like it's not a big deal anymore and that don't see that, you know, why I chose not to get vaccinated, don't even care why I chose not to get vaccinated. All they want to do is just push me away, right? Which isn't true. But like, it was really triggering for me. And I went through places of like, that's cool. That's fine. I've got other things to do, other people I can see. Maybe this is a new opportunity to recreate what I do on Labor Day weekends. You know, and then the day it got done, like I was chatting with my parents and we were having dinner and I just started bawling and I couldn't like contain myself because I was like, I usually am leaving this weekend like so full of love and joy and all these people I only see once a year. And like, I might not ever see some of these people again unless I make a huge effort because they come from all over the country. So I think that was one of my biggest triggers. It's actually not in the story, not in the book, but it kind of is a culmination of everything I talk about in the book of like, how do I accept and still love these people even after I feel like they're all rejecting me because it's not about me, right? So yeah. It's that healing work that, you know, it's always in process.
Yeah. I always wish it would end, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be a thing.
Right.
So let's talk about, like one of the things I really love that you do in this book is you help to do something that I think really depersonalizes things. Like you're saying, it's so easy to take all of it personally. Mm-hmm. And to get really emotional about it, which ends up, you know, in these polarized conversations and debates and ruptures in our relationships. But one of the things that you do is you go into the science of it. Like, what actually happened to our bodies and our brains and our minds through COVID? Because I think it's probably going to take decades to really see the actual impact of lockdown, the psychological impact, the physical impact of the virus, all these things. You know, hindsight will be 2020, but right now, based on what you know about the body, I feel like that's a really important perspective for people to hear. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and this is the interesting thing too. We are still learning, like, what is the largest impact? But if you look at the science of the brain and trauma, like even the American Psychological Association is saying right now, they put out a paper talking about how this is very similar to a large scale trauma. And right, so that really, in some mellow way, our brains have been traumatized throughout this whole pandemic, right? Because what happened is the words that media were using, for example, like stay safe instead of stay healthy, it programs our unconscious mind, right? Because our unconscious mind is always trying to keep us safe, right? It's our basically our survival mechanism gets triggered, like, oh, I have to stay safe. And so when our body and our brain are thinking, I must stay safe, what happens is we go into this certain mode, right? It triggers all these things in our brain. And I don't need to get into all the super, super geeky science about it, but basically when we're in that survival mode of our brain, we can't use logic and emotion and survival necessarily, as all those things they're used by different parts of the brain in some ways, right? So like, for example, one of my masters like to say, when you think a lot, you get emotional. And when you get emotional, you lose your logic, right? Because it's actually coming from different parts of the brain. And this is what's happening. So we get fearful, which is an emotion, right? And our amygdalas get hijacked. And when our amygdalas get hijacked, we go into a fight or flight stage. In other words, like, how do I survive? Do I need to fight this? Do I need to run away? Right? Or we can kind of get overloaded with our other system and we can go into a freeze where it's just like, I don't even know what to do. I'm numb, or I'm dissociated, or I'm frozen. I can't take any action. I'm just kind of sitting here. Right. And so as we all react in whatever way our bodies are most capable of reacting, and what feels the safest based upon our history and our genealogy and all of that kind of stuff, we lose the ability to really use logic and to actually have social connection and empathy for each other. Because our brain is actually put into this state where we are saying, like, how do I survive this? And we're not, like, when we're in survival mode, we're not thinking about how great our neighbor is. It's like, you know, it's like, oh shit, do I run now? Or do I punch somebody in the face? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? Not like, hey, I wonder how my neighbor's doing or why they chose to get vaccinated or not. Like, that question doesn't even cross our mind, right? That curiosity, the empathy, the compassion, all goes away because our body and our brain are literally in the humanistic, get me through this because I need to survive state. Mm-hmm. So that's really what's happening to all of us right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think one of the really cool things that we wrestled with there in that introduction was around like looking at some of the messaging, like you mentioned, you know, some of the, like, why were some of these words chosen? Were they, it was one of those things that, like, in the moment we just kind of accepted it because we're scared. There's a virus. Yep. We don't know. They're telling us to stay in our homes. Like, this is something we've never experienced before. And then once you get some space, right, and things start to regulate a little bit, I started to wonder, like, why use the term social distancing mm-hmm. instead of physical distancing?
Right.
Right. Because the physical thing was what we needed to protect us from the virus, is what they were saying. Right. Mm-hmm. But the term was social distancing, which yes. we're kind of already doing because we're all disconnected and discombobulated and dysregulated. It's really strange, right? And then the stay safe. Like that was something when I was, because I was working at a grocery store when the pandemic happened. I had a little part-time job there. And that was like a regular thing. And for me, I could feel the impact. I could feel the energy coming from the person saying it. And I felt how it impacted me. So I was trying to adjust it to, you know, stay healthy, stay like something more positive because I understood what was happening biologically. Mm-hmm. So what, when, you know, some of the other things, like what else have you seen as these things that maybe people don't know, right? Because maybe they're still feeling a little dysregulated or a lot dysregulated about this. What were some of those messages that you saw that you were like, oof?
Well, even like, it was lovely, like the, how they put like doctors and nurses up as heroes, but what have we traditionally thought of heroes, right? Heroes are people who come through a war. And yes, I know they're talking about a war through COVID, but once again, like how does our brain understand the word hero, right? We use heroes for veterans. We use heroes for people that have like overcome something huge, done something really, really brave, you know, like usually related to some kind of accident, injury or trauma. So that was another messaging piece that sometimes hit. Of course, the masking was very triggering for a lot of people as well. And still is a little bit. They did a research study actually where they took people and had them like, they showed them other people, right? Like basically like, I'm going to show you a picture of all these people. And they said like, this person has COVID, and they watched where the eyes naturally went. And this person is recovered from COVID, and this person never got COVID. Right. So like, let's say I'm in a room and I'm looking at all these pictures of people that did or didn't, or maybe had COVID. And like the stats show that the more someone thought that there was COVID or recovered from COVID, they started looking more at their mouth and at their nose. Like there was this natural thing of like, is there danger there? Is there? So it's really interesting. So even pictures of people that were labeled with COVID or recovered from COVID versus COVID free, I think is the way they actually termed it in the phrase, changed the way we looked at another human. So now we're trying to interact in person. We're trying to understand like, am I handshaking? Am I elbow bumping? Am I staying 6 feet away? Like how am I, like things are awkward as we're talking to each other. I've noticed people, and so have a lot of my friends, notice people are very awkward. Well, and Carlin's noticed this too, very awkward in conversations, you know, having random conversations at the grocery store or on the bus stop anymore isn't as easy as it used to be. And part of it's that unconscious survival fear, I think, that's still sitting in our brain because we don't know we need the healing around it, right? We're just kind of like, oh, it's all clear. We're just come back out like little lemmings and do our little thing, you know? Whereas animals go in the wild and they shake it all off, right? They shake off that fight flight. They shake off the adrenaline. Their hormones come back to normal. And for most of us, that's not happening.
What's keeping it from happening, do you think?
I think a few things. I think the lack of awareness, you know, that, you know, because if one's not aware that there's some level of trauma or emotional disruption that's still sitting in our bodies, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So it's hard to go heal something that you don't know is there, I think, in some ways. I think people are turning, my observation is people are turning that energy outward, right? And kind of funneling it into what's happening with politics, what's happening with, you know, politics, meaning like broad governmental, but also like small town politics or neighbor politics or church politics or whatever, right? We're funneling that wild energy, that energy that's inside us of like, I need to get rid of this. Like, it's almost like a nervous energy for a lot of people, into other things to create that are creating anger. Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed how people drive differently on the road right now. Right. I mean, on the road, people are way more aggressive than they used to be. There's way less patience. There's way more like mild road rage. People are more rude at stores. Like there's not very often like, oh, hey, you go ahead of me. Hey, how's your day? It's just very like all for one. And that one is me and whoever I happen to be within my family. And all of you can just go away. And I think that's perpetuating some of it, is until we take a breath, look at each other with some compassion, empathy, like purposefully start engaging even in small little ways, like saying hi, smiling at people again, keeping our heads up, you know, treating other people like they're human instead of walking in and making broad assumptions like, oh, so are you getting this booster now? Are you getting this booster too? That automatically set up our conversations to be polarized or automatically set up our conversations to be on edge. I think there's a better way to come back to normalcy and to connection. So
yeah,
I don't know if that answered your question. I kind of went squirrely.
No, I think it's important because, you know, to your point, I think one of the things that happens, right, and I'm sure Carlin can give me the actual details of this, but like it gets myopic, right? When you're in survival mode, it's kind of like the view narrows, right? You can only see what you can see. And then from that state, you make assumptions like, well, everyone should be scared about this. Mm-hmm. Everyone is probably feeling this way. Everyone should be, right? It like all of those absolutes start being dealt out really easily, right? The nevers and always and everyone's. And so that is one of the things I know we talked about through this process of working on the book was this idea that, you know, around consent and having this idea that like, is it okay for people to like choose spaces and communities. It's really hard when you've been part of a community mm-hmm. already, like you said, for Labor Day, right? Like, and then the rules change and you got to figure out like, can I do this? Do I feel comfortable doing this for my health and safety? Do I feel complicit with something that I don't agree with? Like there's all of these layers of things that we have to think through now, but in the process of looking at all of this, I know this was a conversation in our family is like, we have so much choice that we don't recognize when we're in that myopic point of view, right? Like, for instance, when I was working at the grocery store and this gentleman came by and he was, you know, just this giant, truckload of food. And I was like, are you stocking a few homes here, like what are you doing, kind of teasing him, and he said, no, we just came back from Texas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, back from Texas, what were you doing there? Like, because it was still like this serious travel stuff going on. And and he said, well, when this happened, our son was in high school and he was already struggling, so like the idea of completely changing everything for him was just not going to be a thing. So we moved our whole family to Texas. I think this was like 6 to 9 months into the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so he could finish high school, like, and be stable. Like that wasn't a decision that, because they're, you know, they didn't do as much as the other states. We were in Oregon at the time. And I was like, it was one of those things that kind of like cracked open my perspective of like, oh yeah, people could do that. People could just go to a place that has other mandates and restrictions that are more in alignment with their thoughts and feelings and beliefs around something. Right. So that was an interesting, you know, piece of that conversation of like, you know, that like, where do we have some control, some choice, some agency?
Yes.
So yeah. I'm curious.
I saw that as I traveled, right? Like, because I traveled part-time during the pandemic, and I definitely saw different states had different regulations and different, you know, everything from everything shut down to places where you go into small towns and everything's open, even against state regulations. And the comment that I heard, because I was talking to a guy about it, he goes, well, here's the deal. Like, how do you help people survive that have no other means of survival? You go to their restaurant, you keep the restaurant open. And if the government shuts it down, well, then you help them open up the restaurant in the back doorway and all the town people go there so they can feed their kids. Mm-hmm. Like that was just like small town pulling together old school, right? And it was so beautiful to be like, yeah, we're gonna make sure this family can survive, because without us buying things, she won't survive and neither will her children, right?
Yeah.
In some way.
Yeah. And the travel thing, I'm curious. It makes me wonder, even with Alyssa, because she's our traveler here, or major traveler. So I'm curious what you've seen and like what your experience has been even going to other countries, because you've been to a few different countries through this process, haven't you?
I have, yeah. No, I just want to jump in and applaud you, Dawn, for braving this topic, because it's such a controversial conversation right now. And it's a difficult one that people need to have, you know, to be able to even work through it themselves. Because through the beginning of the pandemic, when everything was like really happening, I was in, I think, LA and San Diego mostly. And so just trying to figure it out and work through the like onslaught of fear that was happening on my own. And then as I traveled more and I saw the fear to be like really prevalent. And now we're kind of what feels like, what hopes like the, you know, the rounding out of it. And I've been traveling around Europe the last month. And it's so funny watching those perspectives surface in my own lens with people, you know, like I've made several friends here who you kiss on both cheeks when you say hello, during the conversation, when you say goodbye. And that is such a beautiful cultural thing that I love and that I don't experience at home. And that actually really fills my cup while I'm traveling, because I'm very alone lately traveling. And so that intimacy, that touch thing, when I get like a really nice hug like that, or I get the kiss on both cheeks, it's so enjoyable. And then I watch my thoughts afterwards run through the COVID list in my head. And like, I'll be like sitting there and I'll be so happy. And then I'll look at them and realize what just happened. And I'm like trying to make sure that my face isn't showing the visceral reactions going through my body. And then I just kind of work through it. And I'm good later, you know, but it's something that's sort of, you know, been trained. And then I was at a restaurant the other night and this woman just had a sneezing attack, just like a normal sneezing attack. And like one or two, you know, sneezing, you know, honestly kind of grossed me out before the pandemic pretty bad. Like I held in my own sneezes because it grossed me out so bad. I didn't like listening to it. But then this woman, you know, one, two, three sneezes in, you're like, okay. And then it just kept going. And I found myself getting really, really like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. Like, I don't really want to keep eating now. And this is a really small place. And I know how far those sneezes go. And, you know, but it is, we don't realize how, just how massively that collective story and all of the tiny messages that were sent out to create that collective story have totally impacted us on all these levels. And I like to think of myself as a pretty open-minded person. So even as I'm traveling and I'm open to seeing how other cultures are working through these things, I still am able to kind of watch from a third person perspective as those thoughts and feelings run through me. And it's tough to still, you know, work through those things within yourself and then manage the connection in the healthy way that you want. And that's going to ultimately make yourself comfortable with the outside world.
Yeah. I think that was one of the cool things in your book, is like that idea of like the social distancing and like, but what you had just demonstrated with your first book was the importance of connection and touch. And so then like, you know, you were launching that book in the pandemic, right? Like that's what happened. And then
pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic showed up and I was like, oh great, I'm writing a book about touch, where no one can touch each other. But everyone had so much awareness about the touch and the lack of touch because of the pandemic, right? So it ended up being a good time to release it.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking earlier when you were talking, Donna, after Amanda, you asked like, why aren't we like kind of bouncing back, right? Animals are going out, shaking it off, figuring it out. You know, lack of awareness, not understanding, externalizing, you know, these fear by putting it on other people and whatnot. But I was also thinking, like as a therapist, the value of co-regulation of people, right? So you can be sitting with somebody who's having anxiety, having a hard time. There's a difference between kind of from afar instructing somebody to take a few deep breaths and, you know, do some focusing around the room compared to when you're in the room with the person. Mm-hmm. So sitting with somebody who's having a hard time and using your presence right? To help provide some comfort and soothing to this person. And then you get your own benefit because you're also sitting there doing deep breathing and sitting with somebody. But that, I think that was such a loss during the pandemic, and in some ways continues to be an issue because of how many industries, so many therapist friends of mine have gone all virtual. Mm-hmm. Right. So yes, is work still happening? Of course, but I find it's different. So with the physical distancing, we are losing that ability to sit with somebody and have a safe and like comforting experience together. I feel like everyone's just all in their own little pockets trying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that speaks to, you know, what you were saying of like, why are people having a hard time bouncing back? I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And Alyssa, like I've totally had that experience. Like being in a grocery store or the restaurant and somebody starts sneezing or they like cough. They're like, you know, I wasn't doing that before. And then mm-hmm. noticing people like looking at them, right? Like they're doing something terrible and awful by sneezing, right? There's like this judgment is floating around. These are all, I think, really, really isolating experiences socially.
I still remember the first time I experienced that with this pandemic. I was in a lecture hall at UCSD, and it was like the week before everything shut down and went online, and you know, I moved out of there. But I was sitting in the lecture hall, and it was like really the week, I think in February or March of last year, that everything started surfacing, and someone coughed and the whole room looked back, like the whole room turned back to put their eyes on them. And it was like, you know, something that just weeks ago, no one would have even thought twice about. And now I'm standing in line at an airport about to get on an airplane. And I'm not like I'm not super hyper focused on these things all the time. And I'm definitely not a huge fan of the mask, especially on airplanes. But someone was, this couple specifically, both of them were like coughing and sneezing. And it was like, and I slipped on my mask because somewhere in me, it just made me feel more comfortable, regardless of whether it made me feel like I had my own little bubble to keep myself healthy, regardless of, you know, what the stats said about the efficiency of masks and all the things. So,
yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of people, which is probably a good portion of your audience, it's trying to figure out how you're making other people feel too, you know? So like when I'm sick, even if it's not COVID, if I'm sick now, I don't like going out. I certainly don't like going out dancing or having coffee with someone or being in close contact because I feel indecent. I feel like I shouldn't do that now with how our culture is, you know? Feels like a responsibility.
And all the people suffering from fall allergies right now, like people are running around all the time, like it's just allergies, just allergies, just allergies, just allergies. I'm like, oh my God, it's okay. Like, you know, it's like, what's my heart out? Cause it's like, they literally have to sit for, you know, 3 weeks straight here in Minnesota while the pollen's changing and the mold's coming out and all the stuff. And like, oh, it's just allergies. Like I'm not sick. I don't have COVID. Don't run away from me. You know, it's different, very different. Yeah.
Well, and I think too, I wonder if there are some people, because you mentioned this in the book too, like the idea of like that co-regulation thing and how we need that. But some people don't need it as much as others, right? Like the introverted people, like they were kind of happy through this process, right? Not happy, but like they had a little bit easier, let's say, because they didn't feel the disconnection quite as much as those who were more like already kind of staying home a lot or not engaging in a lot of social experiences. And so I wonder even for them though, like what are the, did it add more on top of that? You know what I mean? Like their natural, I'm not really like a people person. Like I don't really need to be around people a whole lot. I enjoy them, but then adding on the extra piece, I wonder if that added, have you noticed anything with your introverts?
The things I've noticed with my introverted friends or the comments that they've made, right, is that it's harder to go back out. Mm. You know, like it got so comfortable to just be in your pajamas all day and work from home and all that stuff and talk with your friends over phone or whatever. that now to get themselves out of the house is much more of an effort, because it's like, it's as if they've lost the skill of just going out and interacting, or they forget what that feels like. And so they go out, and their ability to regulate their own emotional state and their ability to regulate their bubble has kind of dissipated, right? It's like they're out of practice with being around a lot of energy. And so it's more depleting than it used to be. It's, you know, harder to motivate. So that's the things I've heard them saying. Mm-hmm. As an extrovert myself, I haven't experienced that as much. Although I do also notice that I wear out faster than I used to. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's like my ability to stay, you know, go, go, go all day long, like with people has shifted. And I haven't been able to tell if that's just because I got a little bit out of practice, or if that's because it takes so much more energy to contain space than it used to.
Yeah. Like a lot more levels of decision-making and trying to figure out like what role am I playing here? What are the rules of the road in this situation? Yeah, that makes sense.
And when difficult conversations come up, how to navigate them as well, you know? Yeah. I mean, and just not only just with my friends, but with other people, right? Like one of my friends talks about, he was sitting in a tire shop and this guy came in and started like bitching about Biden. And my friend used to be a pretty strong Democrat. And he's like, why would you come in and that's your opening conversation with me? Like, I'm a veteran and I'm a Democrat. And like the way you approach me is completely inappropriate. Although he used different words. But it's this thing of like, we used to be like, hey, how's the weather? We'd feel somebody out about like what their belief is. Same thing, like, oh, you're getting your next vaccine, you're getting your next booster shot. You know, it's like we used to kind of feel people out, it feels like, and like build a little bit of connection and relationship before we went into polarizing topics. And it's as if now I talk about this in one of the chapters, like the attachment, right? There's levels of attachment that start hooking to our identity. And it feels like our belief systems for a lot of people have become attached to identity. And so now we walk around and our belief is our identity. And we're like putting that on people right away, instead of just the feeling out of like, hey, who are you as a person that doesn't have this same belief identity that I do, you know? So it's shifted, which also makes it a little bit harder to navigate, right?
As an introvert.
Yes.
And I'll be coughing, have a dry cough. I'm not sick. They determined it was medication recently that I've been taking that like giving me this dry cough. And I get those looks constantly. I mean, so between that and I'm a person that I don't ask people a lot of questions. Even in coaching, I've had a real hard time. And with friends, I'm really cautious about getting into somebody's business, like asking questions. I have a real aversion to the question why. There's just so much. It feels intrusive and disrespectful. And so I'm super sensitive that way about questions. And going out and people asking me questions that years ago would not have been anybody's business. Excuse me. Whether, you know, medical stuff, it doesn't matter whether the answer is yes or no. To me, it's like none of your business. Like, why are you asking me questions that are none of your business? And I kept pulling back because I don't want to talk about those things. What's the next question you're going to ask me about my health that you're going to expect a response? You know what I'm saying? Just like I found myself not wanting to engage in conversation and not looking at people so that they wouldn't, avoiding eye contact. Excuse me. Wow, they said it'll take weeks to get this out of my system, but so yeah, that has really I have a harder time going out and being around people because I feel there's been a boundaries that have dropped. And so there's that. And you know, I didn't think about it. Of course, I probably knew this on some level, but I've just been wondering why there was so many of these postings, people catching people acting poorly, acting out. And I'm wondering why all of a sudden are we getting all of this? And that's what it is. People are stuck in their mode of survival. I have a tendency to hide, so I'm stuck in hide, freeze, hide. And I'm stuck in that. And other people are stuck in the fight. You know, they're at it. And so I think when I read your book, Dawn, prior to picking up the book, I wouldn't have said I was affected by it at all. But then after reading, I realized, wow, I have been traumatized. My body has been traumatized. The way I operate when I'm in public and whether I go in public and where I go has definitely been affected.
Yeah. So like, I'm kind of a mix of both because I worked from home for so many years before that was ever a thing. And yet we own some businesses where I have to be in the office. And the whole math thing brought up major trauma for me with abuse and such. And so I wasn't sure, like one minute my emotions would be over here and the next minute they'd be on the other swing. You know, I mean, like I felt like I swung back and forth. And I know at first, I didn't think it bothered me at all. I was right there with you, Teddy. I didn't think it bothered me at all not to be around people because my go-to is, you know, that work from home, do it myself, you know, kind of thing. But I think the thing for me is it has almost forced me, because of that other side, having to be in the office dealing with customers, you know, that side of it now, this last couple of years, because we let our employees go. And so to protect them. So then we had to be in the office, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I found myself in this whole different situation of, oh, I can't hide anymore. I have to be out. And what are we going to do for our business? You know, like, how are we gonna, respect what the customer wants, but still respect our stand, you know, on things too. So, you know, when customers would come in and say, oh, you don't wear a mask in here, we'd say, we can put one on if that makes you feel better, you know, and things like that. But I found myself flipping back and forth, and there was that whole trauma situation for me. So my emotions were like all over the place. Never knew from one day to the next, it seemed like.
Yeah, I had the same feeling because I did so much work from home. So it was only that, the, you know, 1 or 2 days a week. And then I picked up more time at the grocery store to help out because so many people bounced. You know, they were like, didn't feel comfortable being in the public anymore. So they gave them a whole bunch of vacation time. And then the people who were comfortable or more comfortable, let's say, being on the front lines, we're picking up more. And it was an interesting thing because there were a lot of, like, I watched, when you're talking about business, you know, I watched, there were some, like, all the politics starting to show up in the break room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this person, they're not wearing it because they're a Trumper. Like, that's an interesting connection, you know, like, so it was really interesting to see how people were starting to make connections with things and how it was starting to divide an otherwise like really cozy workforce. Like that culture was awesome. And the pandemic hit and you could just see this split starting to happen. It was sad, you know, and then there were the conversations around, like, some people were having trouble with the masks and they would take them off while they were doing something in the back, or, but if a customer saw, oof, you know, then it was that conversation of, like, how does someone take care of themselves versus, you know, upholding a brand and all the regulations that they could get in trouble for, like, oh my goodness, just watching all that shake out. As someone who wasn't responsible for anything, but just doing, you know, maintaining the rules in that space. But then it became a thing when we went back on retreats, right? Like, some people still to this day have such anxiety around COVID that it's work to leave the house, get on the plane, and certainly to be in close quarters with other people. And so how do we make them feel comfortable? You know, the spaces that we choose need to be more open and they need to have their own rooms. Like, it's changed. And also, you know, I chose not to do the vaccination as well. So that's, like, another conversation, right? Like, if you're not comfortable, then maybe we do yours online, right? And, you know, didn't require testing and all those things for those moments when we were getting back into space, and you could just kind of see, because it was already this cozy community that, you know, loved each other, wanted to show up, and then was like, ooh, it really made everyone like, what am I going to agree to, consent to, object to, right? Like, all of those things. So I really love how you approach consent in this process, in the book and in the other book as well. And so I love, like, you know, during the pandemic, there were, you know, lots of examples of you, like, because you're a hugger, right? Like, as soon as Don gets in a room, you're about to be hugged. Like, this is just who Don is. And so I can just imagine, like, how hard it was for you to walk into networking meetings after not being with people for so long and be like, so are you comfortable with, So I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, because even though we're not in, you know, we're not in lockdown, we're not in, like, the super scary territory, let's say, anymore that we were in the beginning, I think having that conversation even helps us to think about the polarizing conversations and around, you know, what are we talking about and who's objecting to what and how do we do it? So I would love for you to share a little bit about that.
In the around, like, how do you have conversations, or, like, the actual touching piece, or both?
I think there's a very easy connection for people to, and I think the touch part makes it easier to understand the communication piece.
Yeah. So one of the things that I talked about in the touch crisis is, like, how do you give other people permission, right? Like say, like, here's what I'm open to, but I'm giving you permission. So in other words, saying, like, could I have a hug, is like, I'm asking for something from you, right? And then you're deciding whether or not to give it to me, right? And that's a level of consent. But if I say, would you like a hug? I'm basically saying, I would like to give you a hug, but it's all about you and your wants and your needs. Right? So it's not about me and what I want. It's about what do you want? And so I think the same thing happens when we're walking into rooms with people and we're not sure if they're handshaking or hugging or whatever. Just be like, oh my gosh, are you hugging yet? Are you, you know, like, you can actually ask playfully, like, do you want an elbow bump? Do you want a hug? Like, what are you looking for today? You know, like, what makes you feel comfortable? And you can make it a little bit playful if you want. And when it comes to conversations, it's sometimes about negotiating ahead of time. Like, oh, hey, let's sit down and have coffee next Thursday. Cool. Well, I just want to let you know, I'm kind of over having conversations about vaccination. So is it okay if we just avoid that topic while we're together? You know, just like super easy. Just like you'd be like, oh, by the way, I'm going to need to leave by 5 to go to a meeting. Like, oh, by the way, I'm here, a couple of things I just really don't want to talk about because I just really want to find out more about what's going on with you on a deeper level. You know, so you can, like, already start planning the conversation before you even get there. In a way that lets people know, like, communicates, like, here's what I want. And, like, here are my boundaries around it. And if it does come up, you know, people say things that ask you questions that you're uncomfortable with, you can literally just say, like, I'm enjoying my time with you. Can we talk about something that's not so politicky, or, you know, and just redirect or ask them another question about that, you know, like if you don't want to answer personally, just be like, I find it interesting how people are asking about vaccinations. Like, why do you think people are asking everybody about vaccinations right now? Like, isn't it an interesting shift in our culture? And then it actually makes people like have an awareness of like, oh yeah, am I asked about that because everybody does? Like, just like you ask about the weather in Minnesota, or is it something that I'm really actually curious about because I'm concerned about my health and safety and I want to know if you're vaccinated? Right. So it shifts the consensus of the conversation of like, actually, I want to know because I'm only hanging with people that are vaccinated or whatever. I'm just making stuff up. Right. Like that's a different conversation than just like, oh, I'm asking if you're vaccinated because it's the thing to say right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And then it kind of also removes some of that attachment as well to like, hey, let's open up the conversation and be curious about something different than the actual act of which, you know, I'm participating in. Because it's too easy, like to your point earlier, oh, they're not wearing a mask because they're a Trumper. I watched that generalization. I mean, I did it myself. Like I'd see alternative medicine practitioners like, you need to get vaccinated. I'd be like, oh, aren't you alternative medicine? Aren't you supposed to be like open-minded and accepting of whatever I choose, right? So it's, you know, I even did that where I made judgments of what I thought people should believe in or not believe in based upon their profession or their past or their religion or their governmental belief or their politics beliefs, whatever, you know, like all of those, where they come from in the world, right? Talking to my friends in Sweden, talking to my friends in England, talking to my friends in Ireland, talking to my friends in Italy, like all of them had different viewpoints based upon what was going on in their culture. And it was interesting even to hear the words they used and how they talked about it and their comfort level with it. And so bringing curiosity back to our conversations and instead of getting offended by a question that maybe seems inappropriate, like start coming up with little funny ways to, or easy ways to redirect a conversation that you know might happen sometime by someone that's not paying attention, right? So when that question does come up, then you can just say it with ease and grace and love instead of reactivity. And I think that's one of the biggest keys that people can do right now to really support themselves and their own boundaries.
Yeah. Erin, you've been so quiet. What are you thinking?
I feel like I say this every
What are you
podcast,
thinking about all this?
Like every I'm single like, one.
Would you like me to stop saying
I'm
it?
I'm like Sorry. A jumping.
I love okay. it. I love it. Because it reminds me of me. Like if I wasn't part of this podcast, I'd probably be the person just listening, thinking. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you were in high school when the pandemic.
That's right.
And so like, what are your thoughts around all of this? What do you wish had been a little bit different or what's coming up for you?
Yeah, it was very interesting. We were locked down pretty quickly where we were. So there wasn't, you know, everything went online. And so there wasn't a lot of stuff going on in terms of in the online space. It's very different though, because everyone in my community, like everyone was in person all the time, right? So it was kind of a big shift and, you know, everything that comes with that for teachers and the administrators of the school. Like, I can't believe what kind of a stressful thing that was to get all of that set up in time. I think like when we were all coming back right before we moved, you know, into hanging out again, being together again, I'll think a big part of the trauma that I noticed was like family worries, living with people who you are responsible for and being, you know, not making sure that you don't come back with something that might hurt them. Especially like we were fortunate because we're young, like you, me and dad, we're healthy. We don't have any comorbidities or pre-existing conditions or anything like that, right? During the worst part of it. And so we weren't like too worried. But I know so many people in my group who were so worried about their families. And I also felt that responsibility, right? Of being like, you know, I want to be healthy and make sure that I'm okay. Like it won't give you something to pass on to your family, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was like a weird underlying stress factor all the time, like constantly. And so it made like certain situations really awkward and just tense, you know, it made things less enjoyable for a time. Now things like got better over time, right? People got used to it, but it was really, you know, and it led me to also feeling the same things for a while. I mean, I think I'm over the hump with it, you know, people sneezing or coughing or anything like that, or, you know, and especially in the close spaces, but yeah, it was a thing. It was a whole thing. And I found myself also kind of traumatized by the whole stay away, stay away unless you're sure or whatever, you know? Yeah.
So was it like really well communicated? Because, you know, sometimes like the young people like do this better than the older people, right? we have more decades of like doing communication kind of sideways. So was it like an articulated thing? The people who were living with the, you know, the person with compromised health?
It depended on the person. So often like I would say about half and half, yes and no, actually, at least in my group. And then the ones that I did know that had, you know, family with medical conditions that didn't speak up, I maybe even felt even more obligated to be like, you know, they might, you know, they're just hiding it so that they don't have to be a downer or, you know, like bring everything down. So, you know, just that one awareness from one person who was vocal about it made me hyper aware about everyone else as well, right? So I was always constantly questioning and guessing. And it was one of those things going through my mind, like Lissy was saying, right? That subconsciously that would, you know, determine how I interacted with people or, you know, reacted to whatever happened in the space. So,
yeah,
I think that was another of the trauma, yeah. You brought that up, so but the trauma, yeah. I live in a 55 plus community, and it was a pretty big deal about kids not coming to see you because they want to keep you safe. That was traumatizing. A lot of older people were not being visited because their kids didn't want to bring them. I can't even hardly talk. It was so upsetting. You know that. Like, I didn't ask you to do, I'm not asking you to protect me like that. I can take care of myself. You know what I mean? Trying to navigate that. Like, you're doing something I'm not asking you to do. And yeah, I mean, it was a big thing in our family. Even extended family. And yeah, see, I didn't even realize that was still in me, because that is like, I can feel it right here. Thanks for bringing that up, Erin.
That's why I so always welcome. Have to ask.
I'm the shit stirrer's, you know, little kid. So, you know, it's going to happen. It's my genes.
What it brought up for me was remembering the drama that unfolded between some family and friends when you would make certain choices to do some things and not other things, right? Like, well, I just saw on social media that you went here and you did this, but you don't want to come to my family party and you don't feel comfortable with, and you don't. And it was like this. It was like this detailed judgment around someone else's life that like, and their choices that they made on a daily basis of what they were comfortable with, knowing all the factors that other people don't know. It was like the makings, it was a recipe for just drama amplified, felt like fire. No.
Yep. Yeah. And I feel like that communication piece is the most important thing. Like, there's so much for me to unlearn around communication. And I feel like this whole thing that we went through collectively really brought that to the surface of like, okay, we have to be more direct. We have to ask really good questions. We have to show that we care. We cannot make assumptions. You know, all the little things that we do, that we've done naturally, just because it was part of whatever the family culture we are raised in, or the, you know, wherever that took place, it really forced me to another level of communication with people, of, you know, how and understanding like what feels comfortable and what doesn't, like how much of what I'm saying or the way I phrase questions feels to them like policing their bodies, their decisions, their minds, their beliefs. Like, is that how I want people to feel about me? Because what I was trying to do was just make sure that, you know, we weren't taking care of grandma at the time, but had we been going through the pandemic when grandma was here, like our lives would have been completely different. Like we would have been on total because of her health. We would have navigated that completely differently. And to having those conversations would have felt like policing, and part of it would have been on her behalf, right? But how do you do that and still like honor the person? Like, I don't, you know, this is just what she needs right now, or this is what I'm asking this question because I actually feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not about policing you. It's just, this is what I've decided is good for me. But man, it's gotten really goofy. And I think,
I mean, that's totally been my experience as well through this whole thing. And I think what you said earlier, Dawn, really stands out to me as like the relationship between what's happening with the nervous system and then what's happening in your brain. Because this idea of, you know, being curious and not judgmental and asking questions is lovely. And if somebody is so activated internally in their fear and survival, they're not going to be able to access the curiosity. And I remember having conversations with folks, usually at work, earlier on when there would be this. I mean, I still will say this, but like if somebody says, well, I'm really curious. Did you get the vaccine? Did you get the booster? And in my mind, I'm like, you're not curious. I don't think you're curious one bit. I think you're having a judgment right now and you want to see what I'm going to say. That's different than like a genuine, I would like to know how you think about this. How are you feeling? So I remember hearing this, like, well, I'm really curious. How come you decided to la, la, la? I don't think you're curious. I think you're judgy right now. And I'm sure I've done that too. But
you're like, that actually doesn't sound like
let's go back to tone, intent,
exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Body language.
I think that's a good point you make. It's like, how can we bring that in, right? To whether it's helping increase awareness or helping people have a way of talking about this and also making it not bad. Like, I know where I go. If my nervous system is hijacked and my, like, that part of the brain that I use for logic and empathy and curiosity is not available in a moment, I know how I can sound. Like, mm-hmm. I know how I think. I think, you know, we all have our defaults on that. Mm-hmm. But how we can use that as a way of helping people understand that what's happened, like you're like, no one's bad, no one's wrong. This is like literally biologically what's happening in the body. So if we focus more on regulation and calming ourselves down and getting our nervous systems a little bit back in balance so we can use our brain, right, to be curious, to ask questions, seems like a really critical thing. And who knows how long that's going to, like, that's one of those things that I wonder how long that's going to be needed. This might be decades, you know?
Right. Well, and my understanding too, is people's like cortisol levels can shift more permanently. You know, I mean, you look at survivors of the Holocaust and like some of the research that they've done of like how generationally, right, their hormones are different because of the long-term impact of trauma. So it's very, well, yeah, it'll take a long time to see what's going on. But I really urge people to do their own healing and find that calm, find resources, you know, resource themselves, resource their families to find, you know, community, health, healing in whatever way possible, for sure.
Yeah. And as I think about it, I just think like leading with this, like the curiosity, but also like the authenticity of how we've never been here before. We've never had to ask these questions. Like, what if we just really got honest with people and said, you know, like, I've never had to do this before. I've never had to have these conversations. I don't feel prepared for it, good at it, or anything. Like, can we be in the messy together? And, you know, and if and that allows you to say, like, you know, I'm not even 100% regulated around this right now. Right. But I love you. I want to continue being your friend. I want to, right? Like, how do we kind of, like, it feels like we go in with, like, these are the answers. These are the right things to say. These are the ways to, you know, the right questions to ask, you know, and the right outcome. Like, this would be the best outcome, instead of just being in the moment with someone and being like, have you ever seen this shit before? Like, this is so hard. I feel like it would help everyone to ease into this. We're in a new space. We don't know how to do this. So I'm so glad that you wrote this book and that it is an offering for people to start having that conversation. To understand, like, this is what's happening in our bodies. Mm-hmm. This is what we need to pay attention to with, like, what we're listening to around messages, because those messages are affecting our bodies. Mm-hmm. And also, like, let's be human through this really messy, new, what do they call it? The new normal. Yeah, whatever. I don't like that term, but, you know, it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's what it is. So thank you so much, Dawn, for hanging out with us today and having this really important conversation. Like I said, I'm really grateful that I got to work on this project with you, and grateful that, you know, you show up today doing your own work. You know, honestly, talking about, like, how this is still affecting you. I just really appreciate that. So
thank you.
Yeah.
It's been lovely.
All right, Dawn, I know that a lot of people are going to be wondering how they can get in touch with you, how they can learn more about this book that will be released in the near future.
Yeah, late September, early October. We're just doing the final layout approval. The Audible book is ready to go, and the final layout for the paperback is almost done. So I'm hoping before my conference in October, it'll be out.
That's awesome. So how can people find you?
Probably the easiest way is to go to my website, which is touchremedies.com, R-E-M-E-D-I-E-S. That's probably the easiest way to find me. You can Google it. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram under EFT for relationships. I'm on, you know, the Facebooks, all that stuff. But my website's probably the easiest because it'll have all the release information for the book.
Perfect. Thanks to everyone for listening, our viewers and listeners to this episode. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing, leaving a comment, posting a review, and maybe even sharing something that came up for you. Like, maybe, like some of us, you were listening to this and thought, ooh, I still am feeling that in my body. I'm going to lean in and get curious. Mm-hmm. I look forward to the next time.
Yay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.